our annual very difficult week. We have Kelly and Ricky up to help us this week. Friday was our daughter Kim's birthday, and so she now celebrates them in heaven. We're stuck here trying to celebrate them without her, but we've been doing it now for 10 years. And so, you know, when you lose somebody, especially close, I think it just makes you wonder, knowing that she's there, what is it? What's she experiencing? What's the difference between being there and being here? And what is it all about? So I'm hoping that we can answer some of those questions over the next few weeks. Some interesting messages I've been listening to online with Greg Laurie. He lost his son this year in a car accident, his son Christopher. And so he's been going through a lot of the same things. And he's realizing, I've been a pastor, and I'm speaking for Greg, he'd been a pastor for 30 years. And he could count. He could console people. He'd been walking through, you know, grief counseling with people. But until you've really been there, it's like you really don't get it. I mean, until you've had that issue to deal with in your heart, having to say goodbye to someone close, and really wondering, God, what are you doing in this life, and what are you doing in our life, and how do you process that, and how do you walk through life with that, you know? And so I would say, with 10 years now of experience, we've discovered that you don't get over it. You don't try to get over it. You wouldn't want to get over it, I don't think. You want that person's place in your life, and you want to help find the right balance of grief. Grief is normal and healthy. God created that emotion. He wants you to experience that grief. Because without knowing real pain of grief, I don't think we can really know true joy either. I think, you know, we can't know sweet without sour. We can't know light without dark. And I think it's difficult to know joy without sorrow and grief. So it's a natural, normal emotion. But series title, I don't know if we can bring that up. Series title is Heaven, Nothing Could Be Better. I know there's a lot of descriptions of God and the throne and how bright it is in gold and all that. That's just one artist's rendition of the throne. But my hope is that by the time we get through these messages, that we'll understand a little bit more about heaven, that we'll have more of a longing in our hearts to be there. I know that there's so many things in this life that are disappointing. We have joy and we have sorrow. We have great times of where we have just the right job and everything's going well. We have other times when it's not going so well. We have times when the plenty of money in the bank to take care of bills, and there's other times when it's a big stretch just to get the minimum done. So we have all these great swings, and just imagine an absence, a place that's like Earth, but there's an absence of all the negativity. There's no pain, no sorrow, there's no sickness, there's no loss of jobs in heaven. Lord's going to keep us gainfully employed, I think, throughout eternity. So anyway, let me go to the next slide here. Part one, this first message, is titled When God Makes Everything New, the Big Picture of What Heaven Will Be Like. Okay, here's a sign. We had some strange street signs a while back. I found this one. Heaven and Earth. God will renew the earth at the end of time, creating heaven on this planet and establishing a permanent place of dwelling for and with his people. Sometimes we have that concept because of whatever, movies, artist renditions, false concepts, that we're going to be kind of cast up onto a cloud. You might get a harp, or maybe if you're really lucky, maybe you'll get a little trumpet. But, you know, that's what heaven is, and you're just going to be kind of playing worship music, sitting on a cloud for, you know, thousands and thousands and millions of years. That's not heaven, you know. The Word speaks very clearly in Revelation, we're going to get to it in chapter 21, about a new heaven and a new earth. God's going to just bring this place to a close, and he's going to replace it. The thing that I think that I've been struck with as I've been reading and studying is that even with that, it's still hard for me to get a picture. Okay, we're going to have gold streets, okay, and there's going to be this throne room thing, and I don't know. But when we get right down to it, why did God create this earth for us to enjoy? He's creating a longing in us for a perfect place. But that perfect place, I don't think, is going to look a whole lot differently than one we've got. It's just going to lack the imperfections of this one. I think it's going to replace. There's a, we're going to get to it in a second here. C.S. Lewis, here's a quote from C.S. Lewis. He said, "If I find in myself a desire which no experience in the world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world." And that's the truth. That's why this life just doesn't fit real good. It fits okay. It's like, but it's just like training ground. It's sort of like the practice before the real game, you know, when the guys are out taking practice swings before a baseball game and getting their arms warmed up. That's what earth life is like. It's just warming up, tuning up for what I believe is the real thing. One concern that you'll hear out there about Christians is that Christians sometimes can be too heavenly-minded, so heavenly-minded that they're no earthly good. And you probably might have even heard people say that before about Christians, that Christians are so heavenly-minded and earthly good. I think the opposite is true, that Christians can be so earthly-minded that they can tend up to be not enough heavenly good. And I think that there's a balance in there. I think the Lord planted us here for a reason on this earth. He wants us to enjoy the earth, to be blessed by the earth, to bless others while we're on the earth, but just not to get too hung up on it and not to get too stuck here. I'm going to read our text today is Revelation 21, verses 1 through 8. I didn't put it on a slide on purpose. I just wanted to read it. So, I don't know, there again, just kind of an artist rendition of the New Jerusalem coming down out of the clouds. I don't know how it's going to look, but it could look something like that. And here it says in Revelation chapter 21, verses 1 through 8. You can follow along with me if you like, if you have your Bible with you. This is the NIV translation. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. Sorry, Ricky. No. I'm sure there's going to be a surfing alternative in heaven. I'm not sure how God's got it worked out. Maybe it's cloud surfing. I'm not sure. But there will be something cool, I'm sure. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, fully, beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard loud voice from the throne saying, "Now the dwelling of God is with men, and he shall live with them. They will be his people. And God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away." He who was seated on the throne said, "I am making everything new." Then he said, "Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true." He said to me, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To him who is thirsty, I will give to drink without cost from the spring of the water of life. He who overcomes will inherit all this. I will be his God, and he will be my son. But the cowardly, unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, those who practice magical arts, the idolaters, and all the liars, their place will be in the fiery lake of burning sulfur. This is the second death." So again, these verses climax history. That's the end picture. Now, there's a lot going to happen between today and that day. We know a lot of things, and it seems like a gazillion years away, because we still have to go through the rapture of the church, which is cool. That's when those that are still alive at that point in time will get caught up into heaven, to be with those that have already gone before, to be with Jesus in a temporary place, a temporary existence. Paradise, you can call it different names. That's a temporary existence. Before this, before that period, what's going to happen is once we get caught up, there's going to be a 7-year period on earth when basically God's punishment is rained down on earth. There will still be people making confessions of faith. Just because you missed the rapture, I mean, if you can survive the tribulation period, some people will come through that period and become the tribulation martyrs, and they'll be martyred for their faith, and a lot of stuff's going to go on during that 7 years. At the end of that 7 years, then we're going to be coming back with Jesus to in that great last battle, and time will be wrapped up on earth, and that will usher in another period on earth, a 1,000-year period. I'm not going to teach about all that, it would take forever, but there's going to be a 1,000-year period where Satan's bound up, and we're all going to be together, and then there's still going to be one last harvest, I guess, at the end of that 1,000-year period, and then the New Jerusalem's going to come down. So kind of fast-forwarded to the very end, but that's our ultimate destiny, is in this new place. But it's going to look a lot like this place, because it's going to be a new earth, not some far-out thing that you can't conceive. I believe it's going to be just this earth made better. That's what I believe. Okay, so we're finally going to have heaven on earth. Picture from The Far Side. I had to bring this up. Okay, there's an angel sitting on a cloud. Wish I brought a magazine. You know, that's that's the common perception. Earth, that, you know, Earth's pretty cool. We've got neat stuff to do here. Heaven, well, you know, it's okay. You know, it's better than the alternative. But, you know, who wants to sit on a cloud and fiddle around for eternity, you know, wishing they'd brought a magazine? So that's not our perspective. That's not the Christian view of heaven. Larson wrote that Gary Larson wrote that Far Side cartoon, I think, kind of expressing kind of a fear, I guess, you know, that you know, gosh, we've got all this wonderful stuff on Earth to experience. Who wants to worry about going to heaven? That sounds kind of drab. So I think it's going to be quite the opposite. I think people in heaven are in the real world. They're going to be free from sin, free from Satan, and they're going to be busy. God is going to have you busy in heaven. He's fitting you here, as I said, as a kind of a training ground for the things that he wants to have you doing in eternity. Just, I always picture that. I think, okay, the Lord made this earth in 7 days, and it's a pretty complicated, complex, wonderful place. Plenty of things for a person to find themselves to do. Since that time, it says, since he went back to heaven, he's been preparing a place for us. Thousands of years he's been spending perfecting eternity for us. It's just going to be beyond our comprehension. An entirely different place, but yet familiar. That's what I see about it. So we already saw that little video about what people's perceptions of heaven. People out there really don't have a concept of what heaven's going to be like. I think we're all going to be quite surprised. So back to the text, 21:1. I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. Again, that's a difficult concept for us to grasp, that God is going to just basically do a do-over. He's going to get out the great dry erase board of the universe and go, okay, let's do that over a little bit better. I think we can make something that's going to be, that we know, permanent. Because now we've already been through that rebellion thing. Man has gone through his issues. God has, through the whole unveiling of his will for man, has perfected man so that we can truly dwell with him for all eternity. I think C.S. Lewis captures it really, really well in the Chronicles of Narnia. There's a picture. That's the last of the books of Narnia. And so I'm going to read a little passage from what C.S. Lewis said. And again, it's an allegory. It's a picture. But I think it really captures the spirit of what God's going to do in this last day. So in Narnia, this is the last book of Narnia. And again, a similar event has occurred where their Narnia has gotten wiped out. And so now they're traveling from Narnia to some other place. And so, again, Lucy in this passage is mourning the loss of Narnia, the great world that was created by Aslan, a beloved world that she assumes has been forever destroyed. Jewel, the unicorn, mourns too, calling his beloved Narnia the only world I've ever known. Though Lucy and her family and friends are on the threshold of Aslan's country, which is really heaven, she looks back at Narnia, seeing the destruction, and she feels this profound loss. But as she gets deeper into Aslan's country, she notices something completely unexpected. Now we'll pick up the text. Those hills, said Lucy, are nice, the nice woody ones with the blue around it. They are very like the southern border of Narnia. Like, cried Edmund after a moment's silence. Why, they're exactly alike. Look, there's Mount Pyre with its forked head, and there's the pass into Archenland and everything. And yet they're not alike, said Lucy. They're different. They have more color in them, and they look further away than I remembered. And they're more, oh, I don't know, more like the real thing, said Lord Diggory. Suddenly, Farsight the eagle spread his wings and soared 30 or 40 feet up into the air, circled around, and then alighted back on the ground. Kings and queens, he cried, we have all been blind. We're only beginning to see where we are. From up there, I have seen it all. Etten's Muir, Beaver's Dam, the great river, the Kyre Paravel, still shining on the edge of the eastern sea. Narnia is not dead. This is Narnia. But how can it be, said Peter, for Aslan told us older ones that we would never return to Narnia, and yet here we are. Yes, said Eustace, and we saw it all destroyed, and the sun put out. And it's all so different, said Lucy. The eagle is right, said Lord Diggory. Listen, Peter, when Aslan said you could never go back to Narnia, he meant the Narnia you were thinking of. But that was not the real Narnia. That had a beginning and an end. It was only a shadow or a copy of the real Narnia, which has always been here and always will be here, just as our own world, England and all, is only a shadow or a copy of something in Aslan's real world. You need not mourn over Narnia, Lucy. All of the old Narnia that mattered, all the dear creatures, have been drawn into the real Narnia through the door. And of course, it is different as a real thing is different from a shadow, or as waking life is from a dream. The difference between the old Narnia and the new Narnia was like that. The new one was a deeper country. Every rock and flower and blade of grass looked as if it meant more. I can't describe it any better than that. If you ever get there, you will know what I mean. It was the unicorn who summed up what everyone was feeling. He stamped his right forehoof on the ground and neighed, and then cried, "This is the land I have been looking for all my life, though I never knew it until now." The reason why we loved the old Narnia was that it sometimes looked a little like this. I think that's what we're going to say when we get to heaven. It looked a little like Earth. A little like it. But I think God has just such a greater existence for us all to live in, because we're going to be God's people. We're going to be in a beautiful city, but we're going to be the beautiful city in a permanent home. A city isn't the buildings and the hills and the streets. The city is the people. And we're going to be a new city. We're going to be God's new city, that new Jerusalem, where we're all gathered together for eternity. 21:2 says this, "I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband." And again, there's that picture, you know, the bride of Christ is what we've been called. And, you know, for guys, that's a little bit of a hard concept. Well, I don't want to be a bride. What's that about? But it's not a female-male thing. It's that creation where the groom, being Jesus, is waiting for us. As a groom would stand at the altar waiting for his bride to come down the aisle. There's that moment of beauty when that beautiful bride is presented to the groom. And that's this event when we're called together with Jesus. We're finally going to be brought together just in anticipation, like a bride and groom come together on a wedding day. So we are Christians. We're called the bride of Christ. And that beloved city, that beloved church that Jesus descends into our, he will cause to descend to our permanent home, and we'll, again, dwell together in this new heaven and earth together. So it's going to be beautiful, and it's going to be beautiful because guess what? We're going to be more beautiful. Right now, this earth is kind of an ugly place. You know, people are kind of ugly in general. There's a lot of ugliness in the world. Just imagine, again, everybody knows it's out there. Everybody has that longing for that perfect world, you know. It's just that if you don't know the Lord, you're longing for something that's never going to be. We're never going to have a perfect world on earth. The wonderful governments in place are never going to be good enough to get all the problems of man solved and brought together. There's only one that can do that, and he will be coming back just to do that. So again, New Jerusalem is not just a place, it's the people in that place. So that's the exciting thing to think about. Okay, the next passage I'd like to flip back to is actually in John 14. Again, this is Jesus speaking, giving us something to look forward to. In John 14, verses 2 and 3, Jesus speaking, and he says this, "In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I am going there to prepare a place for you." Again, that eternal promise. It's not just an idle promise. Everything Jesus said has come true or will come true. This is what he's up to, I believe. And this is what people say, well, gosh, you know, what's God doing? What's Jesus doing? That's what he's doing. He's preparing a place for us. Okay, so sin has so discolored and distorted our concept of a place, a dwelling, the where people should live, how people should live, that the prospect of living forever in a city may not be that appealing. Okay, great. If you flip back to that picture of coming down the cloud. Okay, so it's got gold walls. We've got white walls here. Big deal. You know, it's a new place. But it's going to be better. It's going to be so much better. It's just our concept of a perfect city is just imperfect. And I think we just need to anticipate in excitement what Jesus has for us. Just as much as, you know, we don't know when it's your birthday and there's that wrapped up package. Unless you've been peeking, you don't know what's in that package. And there's that excitement of ripping that package open and seeing what's inside. That's what heaven's going to be like when we get there. It's going to be like ripping open the ultimate package. So Jesus continued to speak, "And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, so that you also may be where I am." Again, the promise, You know, it's that fellowship with God. It's that we can begin to taste that now in our private prayer times. It's sort of like, you know, messages from God. When we get in the Word and there's just that passage that jumps out and it speaks directly to your heart. It's that time in your prayer when, I don't know if you've ever had it, I get this once in a while when I'm praying, and I don't know how it is, just something inside happens. You almost get a little tingle down your back, and maybe even the hair stands up on the back of your neck, and you go, oh, wow, there's a connection. I'm connecting with Him. That's, you know, that's just a foretaste. That's just a little sniff of excitement that we get. It's going to be permanent 100% 24/7 when we're together forever. So God will finally and forever live with His people. Again, we've only had a small taste in our human existence when Jesus was actually dwelling on earth in a rather intermediate form. Jesus was man and God. When He comes back to live with us forever, He's not going to have the man limitation. He's going to be 100% God, 100% with us, and 100% our brother. It's just going to be an amazing time. So moving forward into the passage, we're actually going to go back to Revelation. I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, now the dwelling of God is with men, and He will live with them. They will be His people, and God Himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. And again, I don't know how that's going to be, that state where it's just never, it's almost like we're conditioned now. You know, it's like, okay, well, today's good, but watch out, tomorrow's coming, and who knows what clouds tomorrow's going to bring. The cloud tomorrow will never come in heaven. We've got that promise that living with Him in this new earth, this new heaven, in this perfect existence, and no tears, there's no death, there's no more partings. You know, that's our grief time is just the parting part, you know. We know that she's alive. It's much as if you're sending, we're going to be sending Kelly and Ricky back down south here this afternoon, and we're going to cry probably because we're going to miss them. We know we're going to see them again. It's that same anticipation that we have when you kiss somebody goodbye for the last time and they go on to heaven. You're going to see them again, especially, you know, the ones that we know the Lord. We know we're going to see them again. We're going to be with them forever. Temporarily, there's a parting. So we don't say, you know, goodbye necessarily. We just say, see you later. And I think that's the way it is when we have to part with people from this earth, when we say goodbye in death, is that it's just a temporary goodbye. He will no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. That's the thing that we want to get. The old order has passed away. This is a completely new deal. You know, better than FDR's New Deal back in the 40s. I mean, we got a new deal from God, and it's going to be amazing. And He who is seated on the throne said, I am making everything new. Then He said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. Made me think, I was almost going to get the clip, and I said, no, we've got enough to cover today. But there was a clip in that movie, The Passion. I don't know if you remember. It's where Jesus is carrying the cross going out of the city, and he's in that spot where he's stumbling and falling, and Mary, his mother, comes up to his side. Again, not in the Bible, but just a neat picture. And he's just suffering, and his mom's grief is just beyond comprehension, and she's crying, and she's wanting to help. And Jesus looks at her with the cross. He's laying on the ground, flat on the ground. He turns his head to the side and says, Mother, I'm making everything new. And it's just like, you know, it's just this little bit of hope, you know. It's like, this is a bad thing, yeah, but just hang in there. It's going to be better. You know, that's the anticipation we have with Jesus. It's going to be better. And He said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. Again, the Lord speaking to John in this case in the book of Revelation, saying, write it down, mark it. This is the way it's going to be. He said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To him who is thirsty, I will give to drink without cost from the spring of the water of life. He who overcomes will inherit all this. I will be his God, and he will be my son. Again, deep, long promises from Jesus. Again, the cowardly. I better be bolder in this life, huh? Better not get shut out because I'm a wimp. But I think that's an important statement, don't you think? You know, sometimes we shrink in our faith. You know what? You've got all these promises. Why be timid about your faith? Why not be bold about your faith? I don't think he's saying that if you're not bold about your faith. He's talking about those that, you know, it's a different kind of level here. The unbelieving, vile, murderers, sexually immoral, those who practice black, you know, he's talking about the illicit magic, the idolaters and all liars. Their place will be in the fiery lake of burning sulfur, and this is the second death. Okay, so to wrap this talk up, you know, our conclusion, you know, in thinking about heaven, we're not trying to escape. Sometimes people claim, oh, you Christians, it's just all that, you know, pie in the sky by and by. It's like a crutch. It's just like a, in fact, some, who is it? I'm not sure which atheistic, socialistic teacher from the past, somebody will probably remember, that religion is the opiate of the masses. I can't remember who said that.
I remember it too, but I can't.
But anyways, you know, that's the thing, is that there's this concept that, oh yeah, this is just something you all are inventing to get you through. Think about it. I mean, I'm not an anthropologist, but every culture knows that there is a supreme power. There's a God out there. The native Indians, they didn't know what to call it. They didn't have the truth. They didn't have the gospel. But they knew enough to know that there was something out there. Every culture has known it. God created in each person. We're all created from the same cookie cutter. We're all human beings. Adam flesh, if you will. We're created with that spot, a longing for God that can only be felt by God. That's the only explanation. You get some tribe in the middle of nowhere who's never had any outside influence. They worship something. They don't know what quite to call it. You know, Mother Nature or, you know, the sun or something. But everyone knows deep down inside that there is a God. And when you get the truth, you match that longing up with the truth of Jesus, you're set. You know it clicks. And something inside just says, this is it. So we're not here to teach about heaven in order to escape reality, to escape heaven, but to become thirsty. I think there's a heavenly thirst we need to have. It helps get you through. When times are tough, when the bills aren't paid, when you got the flu or whatever, when the newspaper is spreading this, you know, swine flu fear and people are running around with masks on. Yeah, be cautious. You know, you don't want to be crazy. You don't want to be whatever, a daredevil, if you will. But, you know, no, this isn't it. This isn't the end. This is just the path to get to the end. For the believer, heaven is in our blood. It's deep down in our system. A couple of pictures. I don't know. I like these pictures. I like this. I think, you know what? Why did God create us to be so fulfilled by pets? I think that there's a longing in us that He knows. I think we're gonna be surprised, because you kind of deep in kind of, no, pets, dogs really, I don't know, do they really go to heaven? I don't know how God's gonna pull it off, but it's gonna be sweet. And you know what? We're gonna be just like little children in His arms. Oops, let me go back. There we go. Like little children in His arms. I don't know what form we know we're going to be in heaven. We're not going to recognize each other. We know that much. But we know also that if you live to be 99, God wouldn't curse you with a 99-year-old body to creak through eternity. There's going to be some perfected body we're going to have. I don't know what it's going to be. I think it'd be cool if we could be kids in heaven. I don't know. Wouldn't that be cool to be like 10 or 11, 12-year-old body and jumping around? Because I think back to my life. That was probably the best physical time. Once you get to be somewhere along the line, even not too far out of high school, you know, the knees get sore easy and the back, you know, and all this stuff. I don't know what we got in heaven, but I like those pictures. Cyprian was a church father in the 3rd century, you know, in the 200 range, a church teacher and leader. He ended up becoming a martyr. But he said this: "Let us greet the day which assigns each of us to our own home, which snatches us from this place and sets us free from the snares of the world, and restores us to paradise and the kingdom. Anyone who has been in foreign lands longs to return to his own native land. We regard paradise as our own native land." I just love how he said that. You know, I mean, I like this earth. We've been spending some time with Ricky and Kelly this weekend. We went to Burney Falls. I mean, that's one of the coolest places on earth, I think. You know, we went and checked out Pluto Caves over here and stuff, and those are pretty cool. There's just neat stuff. We went to the subway caves that are out there on the other side of Burney. Neat stuff to see, neat natural stuff. God wants it. I think He created this place for us to enjoy. Just keep in mind, He's got an even better place for us to enjoy. So we'll talk about more about that in the next couple of weeks. Let's pray.